Hi everybody, welcome to tonight's program. Thank you for joining us, Coach Menachem Bernfeld. That is Shir 179. Always start off thanking all the listeners and the people that email people about, let people know about it, post on the WhatsApp statuses for making Sunday night Shir such a grace of chizik for the olam and letting you know sichas chaverim. We could speak through very important yanim. Again, if anyone wants to join the WhatsApp chats, you could WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. I'll send you the link for the community chats. I'll put it in the chat. Menachem will put it in the emails. You could also go to menachembernfeld.com and sign up for his email list. He sends out the emails for the shiurim and the replays and all the Coach Menachem hack. So please join us. Again, for the people that are watching us on YouTube, you can click on the like button and the subscribe button for Coach Menachem. So when he posts every week the shiur early Monday morning, you get to watch it. You can listen to it, and it goes on all the platforms. You know, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the Jewish programs called Lushan. Any place where you could listen to it, it probably should be there. So again, let's get into it. Again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors of Lakewood Scoop for promoting here in Lakewood, Ellie and Ariel from Five Town Central, Kyla Kaufman from JCN, and Mrs. Mika Sofer from COL Live for promoting it. We really appreciate it. And again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night at 9:30 at the Zoom ID, we have different shiurim, different topics. We discuss a lot of important yanim, Hashem, hopefully next week. We're not sure what the speaker will be. It's either going to be Masilo or maybe Rabbi Hollander, a big therapist. We're going to figure it out during the week this week, and Hashem will let everybody know. Once it's clarified, please join us. It's going to be the Erev Purim Shir, so please join us. Tonight's Shir is 179. We're going to start off first with Coach Menachem Bernfeld. He's going to tell us why we're here, what are we doing here, what are we trying to accomplish tonight. Coach Menachem.
Okay, welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real. Baruch Hashem, tonight's the Shchoidish Adar Beis, and it's Mishnechnes Adar Marvin B'Simcha. So we're going to talk about a little bit about Marbim B'Simcha, or maybe Simcha, before we could be Marbim. On the one hand, Baruch Hashem, we live in the times that mitzvahs are, you could say, you could be medactic with mitzvahs, talking about today's days, our matzahs, our tefillin. Baruch Hashem, if you compare it to 100 years ago, it's today's Achshadar, Baruch Hashem, it's beautiful. Beautiful from the outside. However, sometimes in the inside, there's a disconnect. Not everyone feels it. And, you know, when you're talking about feelings, some people, they're like, why are we talking about feelings? What's this all about? You know, did our grandparents talk about feelings? But Marim B'Simcha, I think Simcha is a feeling. I think so. So how to connect to the mitzvahs? If these mitzvahs don't, they're not so hard to get. And Baruch Hashem, there's no struggle. And we discussed it many times, talking about to be moist and nefesh for Shabbos. Somebody knew what you're here for, and you had to keep Shabbos, and you push no matter what. So after you were able to get through that challenge, you felt good. I did it. Today, Baruch Hashem, most of us keep Shabbos. And who feels it after Shabbos? They feel Baruch Hashem, they kept Shabbos. And the same thing with other mitzvahs. So talking about Yom Tov, especially when it comes to Purim, to understand, to connect, what it is. I think today's days, we really have to ask ourselves, what is it that we connect to? For those who feel part of it, what is it that you connected to? Is it to the food? Is it with the family time, maybe community and shul? And if that's the case, what happens if it doesn't work out? You know, sometimes it can be family doesn't work out, kids don't come. There are challenges. We go through challenges, shul in shul, or whether at home, or talking about you don't get the food that you like. You're guest, you're single. There's a lot of challenges that people go through. So how do they connect to what's going on when there's challenges? But even when there's no challenge, even when there's things are working out, it becomes like a rote. Like we do a year, another Purim, another Pesach, another Shavuos. What are we connected to? Something to think about. So I think we're going to tap in a little bit tonight, discussing a little bit more the idea of the joy, the simcha of Purim. And I think we'll be able to connect it to all year round, not only Purim and the Yom Tov. Any day, and everything we do as Yidden, connection to Hashem, to understand the mitzvahs that we do. And again, if we have challenges, when things are harder, Sometimes things are harder, but when you push through and you do it, you feel good. So I want to thank Rabbi Pinson being here tonight with us, and we have a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and everybody should pick up whatever they need to be able to connect, to be there, to feel it, the mitzvah Hashem.
Beautiful. Okay, so let's get into it. Tonight's shiur is titled Unveiling the Mystical Powers of Joy, Discovering the Depths of Other Purim, the Meaning in Our Lives, and Turning Personal Challenges into Strengths and Opportunities. I'll read Rabbi Dov Ber Pinson's bio, and then Rabbi Dov Ber will open it up. Rabbi Dov Ber Pinson is a world-renowned rabbi, scholar, author, teacher, mashpia, spiritual mentor, and master of both revealed and hidden parts. Aspects of the Torah. He's been hailed as one of the most important teachers of the generation and widely recognized as one of the world's foremost authorities on authentic Jewish wisdom. Through his books, lectures, and seminars, he's touched and inspired the lives of thousands all over the world. He continues to serve as a mentor to many thousands of students across the globe. Rabbi Pinson has authored over 50 groundbreaking books in Sfarim, Hebrew, in depth, many of which have been translated into multiple languages such as German, Spanish, Russian, and Portuguese. Rabbi Pinson is the Rosh HaKoel of Iyun Yeshiva, Koyel and Mor d'Asra of 84 Viola, and the heads of the Iyun Chabad Center at Brownstone, Brooklyn, New York. He has a website, iyun.com, and his email is contact@iyun.com. Rabbi Pinson, it's good to have you here tonight. Please open it up for the Olam.
Yisher Koyach, both of you, for doing this. Yisher Koyach, everyone, for participating. So I want to talk a little bit about Simcha, the idea of being in joy. And to be honest, in Chazal, there is the Medrash says that there are actually 10 Lashonis of Simcha. There are actually 10 different types of joy. So we're going to talk about a little bit about joy, but a lot of things are conflated. You have to really piece them apart to understand what is actually what we're talking about. What does it actually mean to be joyful? The general word that most people use is simcha. Simcha is the word for joy. What does other Lashonis, other languages for joy? Let's try to understand a little what this idea is. So in the classical understanding of this, the idea of joy or being joyful, which we'll understand for in a moment what that is that joy is connected to a mitzvah. That when you're doing a particular mitzvah, a particular positive command of the Torah, a person should be joyful. Like it says in the Torah, because you didn't serve Hashem with joy, which means this the joy is part of the serving and through the mitzvah. That's why Simcha is connected specifically to the mitzvah, and this is already many of the Rishonim writes, many of the Rishonim write this, the Rav Mechuzaluv and other places write, that the shleimus of the mitzvah, the completion of the mitzvah, or the word even simcha, shin sin mem chesed, is simcha mitzvah chiyuv, that the simcha, there's a chiyuv, there's an obligation to be joyful when you're doing the mitzvah, which is that it's part of the spiritual acts, part of a mitzvah, it's part of connecting to Hashem, is when you do this mitzvah, you should do it with joy. But there's a chiddush in Torah Sechsidus, this is an innovative idea that Baal Shem Tov revealed in this world, that simcha is not only an appendage, a part of doing a mitzvah, which means when I do a mitzvah, I should do it with joy, but simcha itself is a mitzvah. That the idea of simcha in itself, that a person should be in a posture of joy, is in itself a positive thing. Not just to do a mitzvah with joy, but that a yid should always be in a state of joy, always be in a state of simcha. The Alter Rebbe, for example, when he writes in the beginning of Tanya, where he speaks about a certain idea of a person should think about himself, maybe should he think about himself as a righteous person, an unrighteous person. The Alter Rebbe writes that if a person thinks himself unrighteous, a person wouldn't be able to serve Hashem with joy, which means it's an understanding that without joy, you can't serve Hashem. So to be joyful is not just an option, an idea, or a shleimus, like a completion of doing a particular mitzvah. To be joyful is an essence of how we have to be in this world. We have to be in a joyful state. How do we do that? That's the question. But that's the idea. The avodah of a yid, the way a person should be in this world, is that he should be in a joyful state. So just to clarify a little bit, and obviously we'll get a little bit further, but just a very general idea, is a way to think about this, which is written in Sefer Yosoid, is a way to think about this is that in the Torah and in Chazal, we see that the idea of being joy in a particular time is associated with five different things, five different days of the year. And in general, there's something that's called in the teachings of, based on the teachings of Dari, which is something which Coach Menachem mentioned this idea as well, is that there is something that's called the parts of Hayamim, the parts of Hazmanim, which means that there is every single day has a specific quality in that day. And certainly with regards to particular Yomim Tovim, with the holidays throughout the year, they have a very special quality. Let's say, for example, the quality of Pesach is redemption. The quality of Shavuos is receiving the Torah. That's on a very macro level. But on a micro level, every single day is a type of redemption, going out of Mitzrayim. Every single day is a receiving of the Torah. So the headquarters of all joy, of Simcha on the highest Madrega, on the highest level, is Purim. So whenever we celebrate, whenever we're celebrating throughout the year, wherever we're in joy throughout any single day of the year, we're really tapping into the quality of what Purim is revealing. Purim is the opening of that joy that we experience throughout the entire year. And this joy in itself, there are five types of joy, which is really corresponding also, but we're not going to get into the details, corresponding to the five ideas that the Torah speaks about when a person should be joy, whether it's with Shabbos, Yom Chasim and Shabbos, whether it's Shabbos or it's Yom Tov, or it's specifically Sukkos, where it says it should be three times joy, or Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which is another type of joy, or Purim. And the joy, to make it a little bit more simple, is that there's five levels of being, and based on these five levels, who we are, there are different levels of joy. So what that means is as follows. There is part of ourselves, which is our physical selves. This is like the most immediate thing that we are. We're physical beings. This is something that we can touch. This is the most empirical. This is the things that we physically embody, a certain body. We're in a particular space and time. This is our gashmis. This is the nefesh. There is a joy that comes and is associated with our nefesh, with the level of nefesh of soul. The joy that's connected with our nefesh is the joy that comes through a type of relaxation or a satisfaction when we reach certain physical milestones. So if a person even physically pushes themselves in a certain way, let's say a person says, I'm going to do this physical practice, maybe exercise or whatever the person's doing, even it can be a spiritual practice, but a physical action itself. When a person achieves that, a person says, I'm going to say, you know, the whole tilam every day for 30 days or some type of physical action that you do. When you attain that goal, it's a type of satisfaction, which brings you a measure of joy. And specifically when it's connected to actually a physical action, something physically you do, it's a very visceral sense of joy that comes from attaining a level of satisfaction. That's one level of joy. A higher level of joy, which is a higher level of our being, of who we are, is not that we're only nefesh, we're only gufni, but there's also a measure of ourselves that's connected to our ruach, connected to our emotions, which is emotional type of joy. Emotional joy comes when we feel we're feeling good. It's an emotion where we're feeling good, we're feeling loved, or we're feeling cherished, or we're feeling held, and we're feeling in a good matzav ruach. Our nefesh, our ruach is our feelings in a very good place, and we feel joy. That's another type of joy. There's a more subtle form of joy. And the form of joy the more subtle field of joy is a type of intellectual and mental type of joy, which is connected to our neshama, the intellectual capacity, which is a mental joy. Which you say, like, for example, ein simcha katarsis sveikas. There's no joy than the resolution of doubt. When a person is trying to figure something out, you're trying to even put together a certain type of, you know, something that you've got. You have a manual and you're trying to figure out exactly how you put this thing together. When you finally figure it out, or there's some type of issue in your life that's lacking clarity. And then when a person has clarity, that brings them joy. That's a mental type of joy. It's a subtle joy. It's not a joy that you're going to dance in the street, but it's a joy that you feel an inner sense of joy. A higher level of joy, a more subtle level of joy, a spiritual joy, is spiritual joy, which is a sense that when you feel that your life has meaning and purpose, and you're connected to something higher. Most people that walk around that are not in a state of joy, not in a state of happiness, is because they have no direction. They don't feel purpose in their life. They don't feel that their life has meaning. And the more that a person lives with meaning and purpose, the more a person experiences joy. And this is a spiritual joy, certainly when we connect that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're connected to something that's transcendent, connected to Torah and to mitzvahs, gives us a sense of joy that we're not just, you know, physical beings living a very physical life and just acting like any other animal, but we have a higher purpose and we have a higher meaning. And there's a tachlis, there's an intention of our life. And the more a person lives with that, the more the understanding of that, the more connected they are to this reality and connected to this world, they live with more joy. The more a person experiences Hashgacha Pratis, Reish Chachma writes, the more a person feels like Hashem is guiding their life and they feel guided by Hashem and connected to something transcendent, the more they experience joy. But the highest joy, and this is really the essence of joy, the essence of the joy is Yechidus HaNefesh, it's connected to our essence of our soul. And this is connected to Purim, this Achas Bashana, the idea of the essence of Yom Kippurim is connected to the essence of Yom Kippurim, is like Purim is like Kippurim. They're both connected to the essence, the Etzem. That's all you have to say. That's existential joy, existential being joy. This is the joy of being. The joy of being is not a joy that because we achieve something, it's not a joy because there's a resolution of a certain thing, because we accomplish a certain thing, because we feel a certain thing. It's a joy of existence. The most essential existence of a person, of a yid, is ois v'chev v'mkoymoy. Ois v'chev v'mkoymoy means in the essence of its space. We're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but this is connected to our yechid, yechid l'yachta, our soul that's connected to that space. In that essence space is ois v'chev v'mkoymoy, that's a place of essential joy. And on Purim, what we're trying to do, and that's the avodah of Purim, that's what the work of Purim is, we're not trying to achieve a certain goal. We're not trying to accomplish a certain thing. We're not trying to understand something. What we're really trying to do is to rediscover the essence of who we are. And sometimes the rediscovery of our essence of who we are is by stopping to be in our head and thinking about who we are. And this is one of the reasons why on Purim, the mitzvah of Purim, which is very contrary to every other mitzvah, really, because every other mitzvah of the Torah says, L'man yedu kibisukas hashavta. It's a mitzvah to know. There's always a mitzvah of das. Even if a mitzvah needs kavanah or doesn't need kavanah, but certainly a certain type of kavanah, klolus you need, a general intention, you have to know what you're doing. And certain mitzvahs need a kavanah pratis, you need a very specific intention, and you have to be very much aware of what you're doing. And the mitzvah of Purim is to get to a place where you're outside your das, when you're beyond your das, beyond your conscious awareness, which goes back to the place of getting back to the tree of life, to going back before the tree of knowledge. There's a place of the tree of knowledge, which is the place of opposites, which is good and bad, and it's a duality. And therefore, sometimes it's working, sometimes I'm getting someplace, and sometimes I'm not getting someplace. Sometimes I'm in a state of lack of clarity, sometimes a state of clarity, and it swings back and forth. That's the way most people experience joy, and it fluctuates. But the essence of joy is not a feeling, it's a state of being. The essence of joy is a state of being the way Adam and Chava existed prior to eating from the tree of knowledge, prior to the Chet Etz Hadas, prior to the understanding that there's opposites. When they lived in the place of the tree of life, of unity, of connection, when they lived in the essence of who they were, and they lived in the true essence of who they were, they experience Oyez V'Chev V'Mekoyim, they experience joy. On Purim, we're trying to get to a place where we can let go of all the trappings that don't allow us to be joyful. And there are many. And it could be life experience itself. It could be because you're going through a hard time, or because something else is happening that's difficult in your life. And these are all stories, which is true for most times of the year. And you have to overcome those stories. So if you're working hard, you're trying to get to a place, that's all in the world of a duality of separation. And in the world of separation, there's always going to be ups and going to be downs. But Purim is the essence of joy. That's the nekudah of all joy. The nekudah of joy is that in my neshama, my deepest level of myself, I'm connected to Hashem. That's transcendent of me knowing and not knowing, or me doing or not doing. And in that essence connection to Hashem, I'm in a state of perfection. I'm in a state of joy. And that's what we're trying to achieve on Purim. Some people do this consciously. Some people do this not non-consciously. But ultimately, the idea of to get to Purim is to get to that very raw place of pure joy, the beingness of joy. And that's the way that we're trying to get through on Purim. And that's corresponding also to the four letters in the name of Hashem and Yud. And there's many other allusions to this idea, but the point is to get to this place where we sitting on Purim at some point in time, during some point, and however you practice Atal Yada, whether you go to sleep like the Ramah or you drink too much, however you get to that place, to get out of your Das, to get out of a place of Das, and to get to the place where you're in your essence of self, and then that place would be a perfect state of joy.
So the drinking is not to get to the joy. It's forgetting about everything there that's holding you back from the joy.
Correct. Exactly. The drinking is not to get you to joy, because you see that, unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, unfortunately, the way people, what people, when a person drinks, usually what happens is just exaggerates their emotions. So if a person's sad and they drink, they get really sad and they start crying. If a person's a little happy, they exaggerate their thing and they get more happy. But the idea is that drinking is just to get to the place where Ad Lo Yada, the intention is to get to the place beyond Das. However, that's why the Ramah says you can actually go to sleep, because it's not about the drinking itself. The mitzvah is not in the drinking. The mitzvah is to get to the place of Ad Lo Yada, till you get to that place. Once you get to that place, you're there, and then you're in a perfect state of joy. And that's why joy is not going to be something that you have to talk yourself into and try to think about it. And like, it's not Halavodah, it's not Hanukkah. It's not like you have to think about the miracles that happen that allow you to be Halavodah. There's a big, even, you know, on Purim, we don't say Halal. But we don't. It could be that Megillah is a Halal, not a Halal, but it's curious a little bit. But the idea of Purim is not about that. It's getting to a place where I am in my essence. When I strip all these things away, do I get to a place of perfect joy? It's similar to Yom Kippur, like the Avodah Yom Kippur. The Avodah Yom Kippur is not to fast. That's not the, even though it says Inu, but it's not the idea of fast. It's Lishbois, like the Rambam writes. The idea of Yom Kippur is to rest from eating, drinking, and doing these other things. So when you rest from doing all these things, something else emerges. Something different emerges. Your whole self, your Yechidah Shebenefesh. That's the same thing on Purim. You're going to rest from all your Das to get to a place that's your beyond Das, and then you're going to be in a perfect state of perfect joy.
Okay, well, let's get into the polls. We have some questions. Let's get into it, all right?
Sure. Isn't that?
Let's do the polls first, okay? Three polls. Everybody answer to the best of your ability. Let's get a feeling from the Olam. In your understanding, what brings you the most joy, right? What brings you joy the most? Four options. Expressing happiness outwardly. Expressing internal calmness. Absence of financial pressure. Or accomplishing personal goals. Menachem, you see the polls?
Okay, mm-hmm. Those
questions. Everybody answered the best of your ability. No, I don't see it here. Okay, second question. In what ways do you engage with Purim? Like, what talks to you on Purim? It's observing the mitzvahs, doing the mitzvahs, you know, the mitzvahs ayam of Purim, preparing by learning about Purim in advance, organizing, ensuring organizational readiness, like you get ready for the, you know, the festives of Yontif, attending Purim parties and events in the community, or option five, I haven't considered this before. Third question, thinking about personal problems can make us stronger. So how do you feel about that? Like, if you go through personal things, you become stronger. You see tougher times as chances to grow stronger. Looking for ways to learn and change when things are hard, like when you go through a Shiur HaTikufa, that's the time you think through things where you should, like, change your mahalach. Or three, thinking about problems, how could help us find new strengths and challenges? Or you, when you go through a Shiur time, do you think about things inside of yourself that gives you new strengths for those challenges? One and three are similar, but it's a little different. It's like more looking for that strength, you know, where to go through it. Those are the three poll questions. But the answer? Okay, in a few seconds. Menachem, you might have to read the polls, so I'm not seeing the answers coming. You see the answers coming, Menachem? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to end the poll, and let's share the results. Okay, Menachem, you share the results.
Okay, so question number one, in your understanding, what brings you joy the most? So we have 10% expressing happiness outwardly, 59% experiencing internal calmness, only 2% is the absence of financial pressure.
Only
2%. And 30% is accomplishing personal goals.
All right, Vincent, what are you tying up?
I think that people voted the correct thing here. I think you're talking about external happiness, very low levels of happiness. I think, yeah, taking away the negative pressure, but that doesn't really bring you happiness. It eliminates the negative, but it's not bringing you happiness. Accomplishing personal goals is what brings people happiness for sure. That's the type of happiness that people have, but it's very short-lived because once you achieve a goal, this is the derech of a person, right? A person is a mahalach. So you achieve a certain goal, and then you have a bigger ambition to achieve bigger goals, which hopefully that's the way you work. And success brings success. You bring to a certain level of a certain madrega that you retain, and then you hopefully retain a weiter. You go further. So it's short-lived. It's temporary. Ultimately, the real level of happiness is experience internal level of being. People calling it calmness, whatever you want to call it. It's a certain sense that I'm good. Everything's good, and I'm somehow connected with the essence of who I should be in this world, and everything is a state of shlemus, and
You know,
that's a person.
this question is going to come up soon, that if
Yeah.
someone feels good, if you feel content with who you are, why should I have the desire to do more? But we'll talk about it soon.
That's a good child. It's a good child.
Very good. Question number two, what ways do you engage on Purim with Purim? So we have 43% observing the mitzvahs, 23% preparing by learning in advance, learning about the Yom Tov, 13% ensuring to organize, to be ready for Yom Tov, be ready for Purim, or whatever it is. 16% attending Purim parties and events in the community. And 6%, I haven't considered this aspect yet. Well, I
I don't
suppose.
see the answers by me, but maybe I don't have to do this. Once I just gonna, oh, you have to pull it down. Sorry.
Yeah, please.
So the most percent is preparing about form in advance. Yeah.
The mitzvahs, that's 43%.
Oh, I didn't see
43%.
that. Oh, the mitzvahs. Okay.
Yeah.
So the. So that's a good, that means people are very much connected. So this is obviously if you're feeling through the mitzvahs, you know, there's the midiraisa and midirabbanan. In Purim, there's the obligation, midatoyah, which is the essence of Purim, and then there's how it's experienced through midirabbanan, through the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs and the midirabbanan, they connect us to the essence of Purim. So the mitzvahs are the tools that Chazal. And this is Midrabanan. So Chazal understood that by doing these particular things, by giving Matanis Levyoda, which is the idea of living with purpose, and you feel like your life is meaning, and by sharing friendship with other people, which is Mishlech Manas, and by Sotis Purim, which is the idea of celebrating together with family, and certainly reading by Kriyas Megillah, which is the idea of sensing the Hashkacha in life, is all the things that we spoke about before, which brings a person to Simcha in the most, the basic forms of Simcha. So, okay, I know that my life has purpose because I see the Hashkacha. This is what really the Mikra Megillah, the reading of Megillah, is what's the intention of the reading of Megillah? The intention of reading Megillah is that a person has to recognize that even though Hashem's name is not present and not in a revealed way, that the story of Megillah reveals it's a Megillah of the Esther, it's a Megillah of the Astara. It's a Megillah, it's revealing that even in the place of the Astara, which seems to me I don't see the hand of Hashem. At the Oymek, the story, if you read the Megillah, you see that the hand of Hashem is always present in your life, which means I understand the Hashkacha of life. There's a vort, and the Mishnah says, that if someone reads the Megillah backwards, you don't fulfill your obligation, which means you're back, if you read the fat last chapter, it's only first. Lo yotzem. But there's a famous saying by the Baal Shem HaKadosh that he says that what is Akoyos Megillah Mafreya? What does it mean someone reads the Megillah Mafreya? It means someone that reads the Megillah that happened to in the past. Nothing to do with my life. There was once a person, this guy's name was Ahasuerus, and the person was Haman. It has nothing to do with me. And there was a Mordechai, and there was an Esther, and the story happened. The person of Megillah Mefreya, someone that reads Megillah says it was someone else's story. It was not my story. Is lo yotza. You didn't fulfill your obligation, which means you have to read the Megillah as if it's your story. That you're going through these challenges, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing you his hand, and even though things don't seem me a day, we don't know when it happens, and when things develop, and when's the Laila who. And when the king gets up and when things start moving in our direction. But when we see the Megillah, we say, this is my story. I see this in my own life. I see things that seem to be superfluous and seem to be completely inconsequential. And eventually that brings to the biggest Yeshuas. That's the Madrega of Kiryas Megillah. You're not reading the Megillah Mefreya. So this is another way of seeing the Hashgacha. There's actually even a the deeper pshat, an even deeper understanding of a Kares Milo Frey, which is, and most times people live their life, which is that they live forward and understand their life backwards. So when you want to say that you see Ashgacha in your life, you see the hand of Hashem, you don't see it, you see it in retrospect. You say, you know, the fact is, I don't know why I'm married to this person or why these are my children, what's the place that I live? But if I look in retrospect, I say, oh, that's exactly why, because Hashem wanted to be in this place, and Hashem gave me these koiches and this and that thing. So then it starts making sense. So you're reading the story, Lemafreya. You're reading it backwards, retroactively. So if Siddur Shabbos Taina, that what it really means is that if you see the Ashgacha only in retrospect, it's Layotza. Still not good enough. You have to be Kareh Lemagila as you're reading, you have to see the Ashgacha. You have to have the awareness that Ashgacha, that it's choshech and it's dark, and maybe you're going through a hard time. But you have to live with the awareness that there is the Ashgacha, there's the purpose and there's meaning. And it's a hester. And it's a noichi hester. There's the noichi Hashem alekecha, which is the revealing of taking out of Mitzrayim, which Hashem takes us out of Mitzrayim of constrictions and limitations and brings us to a place of freedom. But there's another noichi, there's another revealing of anoichi, which is anoichi aster aster, which is Aster Menotayr B'nai, that the idea of the Megillas Aster is in the Astara. So thinking about all these things, whether it's doing the Maisa Mitzvahs, the different four things that Chazal tell us to do, or participating in a Purim thing, and certainly preparing in advance is always a good thing, because Misha Tarach B'Erev Shabbos, Eichel B'Shabbos, if you prepare Erev Shabbos and eat on Shabbos, you don't prepare for Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos, you can't eat anything. If you come into Purim and you just pop into Purim, it doesn't go. It's not going to work. I mean, maybe you have Siat Nishmaya and it's going to work, but generally, everything needs Achana. Everything you do in this world. I understand if a person is running a marathon, they stretch. A person is before they eat, then maybe they open their belt. Everyone does type of some type of Achana. You're always doing an Achana. You're always doing a preparation. So certainly with regards to Purim, you can't sit and work till the 5 minutes before Shkia, then show up to Shul and Vayibim Me'achashverish. If you really want to feel the Oyer Purim, you have to put in the work. You have to, at least 30 days before, you have to, like Chazal say, a person should put in the work and to think about what Purim is and to learn the Svarim about Purim, to get into the Oyer Purim. So these are all correct answers, I think.
Here's a third question, thinking about how personal problems can make us stronger. How do you feel about it? So 29% seeing tough times as chances to grow stronger, 34% looking for ways to learn and change when things are hard, and 37% thinking about how problems can help us find new strengths and chances, how it could change us, how it could help us.
Okay, so Barrett, this is like a pretty even, everyone's in agreement mostly, more or less.
Takes time to get there, you know, when somebody's going through a challenge, takes time to get to the place.
It definitely takes time to get there, and it's certainly not your place ever to tell that to another person. You know, the Eibush of the Helfen is only something you're supposed to tell yourself. When a person comes to you and is having a troubled time, is going through a difficult time, you can't say Gamzu L'Toyva and call Madav Rachman and tell him 100 Mamar Chazal.
Right.
That's only Mamar Chazal that's meant for you to learn for yourself. When it comes to another person, all you can do is give them a hug and say that I feel your pain. And stop. If they know all the Mamar Chazal you know, and they know everything that you, all the Chochmalach that you can tell them also. But really, when people need them, when they're going through a hard time, it's just a person to be there for them and to hear them out and to be present for them. But when a person is going there for their own life, a person wants to think about what a person is going through, the hardships in their whole life. Of course, the idea is that if you are going for your own self, then you do become stronger and you get to a certain place of clarity and strength.
Okay, Gabal, let's go to the first question. Okay, you're on.
All right, Vincent, thank you for coming on with us. I actually told Usher a long time ago, I was always waiting for Vincent to come. I have two questions. One's more like practical, one's more of like a theoretical, because I know you always deal with the very deep stuff. So you were discussing, you know, on Purim, the mitzvahs, the highest level of simcha is a state of being, not a state of doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you said drinking gets us to there, it's not the drinking itself. What does it look like from an outsider perspective, or what is it supposed to look like in a certain sense, to get an idea of where we're going to? Is it like theoretical, someone could meditate and just go into their neshama and be happy of that they have a neshama? Like, what does it look like? And my second question is more theoretical. I know you said about, one of the levels of simcha is when someone feels they are doing something with for a tachlis, having a fulfillment. I know in science there's something called placebo effect. If you think something, even though it's not real, it gives some sort of effect. What if someone feels they have some sort of fulfillment because of whatever, but that value is not be'etzem true, right? It could be just something that is not toiridic, but so is that simcha, or that simcha that doesn't last so long? What is that considered?
Your second question, I'll answer first, is because is that you're asking two a few questions. First of all, how do you know if the purpose is a correct purpose or not? And then you're asking also, sometimes a person says, I have a certain purpose, a certain tachlis, I reach it and I feel joy. I just don't know if it's kedusha or not. How do I know if it's kedusha or not? Is that sort of the second question?
Well, I was going, I mean, there are certain things we know is not Kedusha. It's here.
Okay.
There are certain things that are just not Torahidic, right? I mean, it's not a Torah value. Let's say something we actually
Okay,
do know about.
so that you're not asking about at all. You're saying if it's not Torah value, you understand that it's not bringing you real joy. Or you're asking
Yeah,
about Torah.
because I trust that it's not
Okay.
really real joy.
Okay. You trust it's not, but I just
But we see
there's
people, they think or they feel happy on something that's really not a Torahidic value, or something
right.
that's
And so I
negative.
think I, that's why because joy is such a very tenuous word. So I think there's a lot of mistake conflating joy with pleasure. That sometimes a person has something that's pleasurable, they think that is joyful. And pleasurable things is very immediate and temporary. So whatever you have, you're experiencing in a certain like a phys I'm talking about physical pleasure for certain things. Let's say even if it's taivas achil, let's say even food, and a person's language, which is klipas noga, it's not like a negative thing. Person says, I really love to eat these types of foods. And it brings me tremendous happiness. No, it's not happiness that it's bringing you. It's bringing you pleasure. It's a type of tainu, a type of pleasure, which is very temporary and very localized, which means it's temporary in terms of its lasting. It lasts for a few minutes. And usually the nature of pleasure is that oyev kesef leish bekesef, this idea that once you have, you want more. Because it creates a certain chemical thing in your brain that says, now, okay, now I'm addicted to this thing and I want it again. And you just want more and more and more. And so it's temporary. And also, it's very localized, which means that it's a very particular place. The pleasure is experienced in a particular place in the body, whether it's your food taste and in your mouth, et cetera. These are very, we're talking about living with purpose and meaning and connection. Is this is this is a different type of it's we can use the same word, but it's tainug ruchni. The tainug ruchni, spiritual pleasure, spiritual state of enjoyment, to be in that state of amidushni, to be in a place of joy, in that true state of pleasure, is dveikus. It's the absence of self. It's not the indulgence in self. It's when the self becomes submerged in something that's bigger than itself. And that type of pleasure is the ultimate pleasure and the ultimate joy that a person can experience in terms of from external. Something that's induced externally, that a person can feel, which a person has this gagui, or this connection that a person's going out and being drawn into something that's infinite, and something into the Ein Sof is. And when a person experiences this type of pleasure, it's not temporary. It lasts, and it's not localized. It's experienced throughout the entire body. The Leshem writes about it, whose Yahrzeit was yesterday, about this idea of this type of tainug. It's not a chassidish source, but it's a very deep Kabbalistic source for this. That this is a different type of pleasure. So I think when we take the word for joy, and we ask, yeah, but this person is enjoying Olam Hazeh and he has a lot of joy in this physical world and this material wealth, et cetera, it's very temporary and very
So
localized.
I meant to
And
ask,
what we're
okay, on
talking
the
about,
top. So
yeah,
I meant to say, let's
go for
say,
it, go
I
ahead
know
and
you
ask
wrote a
me.
whole book about visualization and imagery. I read the whole book. like almost twice. It's very, very
Right.
deep. There is a whole scientific way of explaining it, you know, without Hashem, people release their visions to the universe or whatever. And we do see that there are results. And like, so we know based on Tanya and Olsvarim that there's Einayin Milvadoi, but at a certain sense, people do get some sort of joy with that, let's say. So that is more also like, I would say, bounding on a spiritual thing, bordering on a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
So is there a difference, theoretically, or just one's Mitzvot HaKedusha and one's just like Klipas Noiga or whatever, when people feel joyful, but the value is not a Hashem value. It's not mixing Hashem with it. It's not having bitachon with
Well,
Hashem.
Explain. Let me give you a little oisius for that. So maybe, I don't know if everyone's following this conversation, but let me give you a little oisius, a little language of this. The highest place that a person can reach on their own, because a person is a yesh, which is we're material beings, physical beings, the highest level that a person can reach on their own is ayin, because yesh comes from ayin. So ayin is the nothingness. So when we let go of a somethingness and we enter into the world of the emptiness of the nothingness, we can experience some type of release and some type of ecstatic state of what people will call joy. And when you say Torah, this is very important, because Torah is atzmius. The Torah is mushers and atzmos, which means that the Torah is not Hashem, kaviyachol, is not, as the Maral writes about this as well, is not ruchnius. Because Baruch is not ruchnius. Hashem is not ruchnius, just like Hashem is not gashmius. And ayin is not God. The ayin is not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like the yesh is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, same thing, also the ayin is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a person experiences some type of elation, some type of inner joy, or some type of extending themselves from the yesh into ayin, they're not getting the full picture, because they're not experiencing the yesh amiti. The yesh amiti is the ultimate being, which is the atzmas ein sof, which the ultimate being includes both the ayin and the yesh. And the way it would translate, to make it more simple, is that if it translates into life and ethical behavior and actual spiritual practice and actual not maisa mitzvahs, that would be the difference. Because if you're tapping into ayin, then it's the emptiness of everything, and you don't care about doing anything. And it's not about, like you say, it's unethical, and it's not. There's no reason to have ethics, because there is nothing unethical, because you're going to a place that's beyond ethics. It's beyond good and evil. And if you go to the place of the yesh, it includes both. I don't know if this is clear to you, but I hope it's somewhat clear.
Yeah, to a certain extent, it resonates. To a certain extent.
When you're connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're connected to the essence of life, and the essence of life includes both my emptiness and my fullness, both the place that I'm quiet and both the place that I'm loud, both in place of my stillness and both in place of my expression. And that's the nekudah of atzmius, which is a nois hafachim. That's the real idea of that's incidentally, that's actually why we do on Purim. Purim is talking about Purim, because Purim is in an atbash is guf. Pur is atbash, the letter exchange, the idea of the body. And if you look at the mitzvahs of Purim, they're very, very tangible mitzvahs, very, very physical things. It's like you eat, but you eat more, and you drink more. Even if you sleep more. Very, very gashmistic things. And that's the ultimate expression of the essence. The ultimate expression of the essence is specifically, it's two sides of the same coins, because Yom Kippur is the opposite of that. There's no achilu shtiyah, and it's the opposite. It's like the side of the ayin, and the side of the yesh is Purim. And together, the yesh and the ayin together is the atzmis figure, essence of the days.
So the first question, how does it look from an outsider? When someone wants, is this something that's a Baal Madrega, or it's something theoretically anyone could like?
No. Baal Madregas is a Madrega. Baal Madrega means a level. And in a level, that's a duality. Level means I'm going from 8, from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, right? So you'll say a Baal Madrega is on number 10, and a Bigel Madrega is on number 20. This is not about a Madrega. This is about not being a Baal Madrega. It's the avoida beyond the avoida. Because the avoida beyond the avoida is who you are right now. So it's not a Madrega, it's your essence. And in your essence, everyone can reveal that. Now you say it never happened to you. I don't believe that. I believe every single Yid had, even, it doesn't have to be Yom Kippur or Neila, and it doesn't have to be after Sudas Purim. Every single person had a Gilu V'Yichidu Shem HaNefesh one time in their life, which is what. It could be they're walking down the street. It could be when they're holding their child. It could be any experience you have. And it's like, yeah, I stop. Everything's good. This is the way it is. And that moment that you stop, that you have this like epiphany, that every single thing in your life, every single detail of your life, you're not thinking through this because it's not logical, but not every single thing in your life is exactly the way it should exactly be. That's the Gilui Yichida. That's that revelation of Yichida Shel HaNefesh. When everything in your life makes sense, not logically sense, because that's already in the world of duality, in the world of separation, but everything is exactly Zoi. That's what I say, Kocha. Kocha Yasalish Hashem. Kocha. So in the Megillah it says Kocha. And the Baal Shem says Kocha Yasalish. Kocha is Kesa Kol Aksarim, the highest level of Kesa, the highest level of time, the highest level of pleasure, the highest level of being. That's Oyla Kesa, the world of Kesa. And what is Kesa? How do you actually translate Kocha? Kocha. When it's Kocha. When it's Azoy. That's when you get it. The moment you say Azoy. I don't know if it translates in English, but that's the point. The point is, it is. And sometimes you see with a child, sometimes a person with a spouse, sometimes you see with a friend, or you see hopefully within yourself that you got it. And it maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's a minute, but you know that you have that nekudah in your neshama that can get to that place.
Well, wow, thank you so much, Rabbi.
Let's go to the next question. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. By the way, we have 32 of your books in the library here. I've got to check them out and read them. I had a question, you know, maybe it's sort of connected to Ben said that, I mean, I'm able to make Purim kind of a pleasant experience. I think at this point, it's almost becoming like an escape, probably even to a certain extent, Shabbos as well, where a lot of, you know, personal things going on as well as problems in the world where I just, I may look forward to the holiday, maybe for the wrong reason, definitely be besimcha on Purim, but there's, I don't know if it's coming from the healthiest place or the best place, I just don't want to, I don't want to think about my, the financial, I don't want to think about, the war in Gaza. I don't want to think about all these other things. I mean, is it okay to approach the holiday with that? Yeah, I mean, I do get a certain strength. I mean, Purim, unquestionably, I do the mitzvahs, that socialize. I celebrate, but I'm just wondering. It's like what I do after the holiday is over. There's always that, kind of back to the real world feeling. So I don't know if, I mean, really being besimcha, or is it just like I said, it's a numbing effect almost. Yeah.
I mean, you're asking a lot of questions, but try
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
I think suffix simcha l'chumra, if you're doubt whether you're joyful or you should just be, at least you should be joyful, however you get there. Of course, obviously, it would be much better to come to Purim and to come to the Yom Tov, and not like as an escape that you have to, but actually as an aliyah, as something as an elevation. I'm leaving the mundane world. I'm leaving this place of the trauma and the drama of this world. And Hashem gives me an oasis of space. Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave us a gift that these are like pockets of time throughout the calendar that Hashem says, I'm going to open for up to you a certain portal that you're able to tap into something that's beyond the normal course of the year. And on Purim, we have this idea, besimcha, that we can get into the place of joy. And of course, we always have to think to ourselves, is not during Purim thinking about what's going to be tomorrow, but just recognizing that Purim is supposed to give us strength through the entire year. That every single time of the year, hopefully throughout the entire year, where you're going to feel a little bit joy and a little bit elation, a little bit higher, hechlikat, something higher, that's going to come from the Purim experience, that your experience. And the more you're going to enter fully into Purim and just be there presently and say, today I'm going to celebrate Purim as if it's I'm a tzaddik, and today is going to be the highest day in my life. Then, God willing, you're going to receive from that strength throughout the entire year. So no matter how difficult a person's life will be, and how difficult the world seems to be, you'll always be able to draw that oil of Purim, a Mashiach, the level of oil of Mashiach.
Just not just a mental vacation. It's,
correct. It's a portal to receive this. It's a portal that we receive all this, this koyach for the entire year. It's not an escape. It's, you have to look at time as there's a flow of time, and the flow of time follows a certain direction. And in that, Hashem puts these certain moyadim, certain encounters within space and encounters within time. There's an oil moyad, there's a space, a place that we encounter Hashem in space. And then there's moyadim, which is an encounter. We encounter Hashem on a higher level during these times. It's an opening for that idea. And we have to receive it and receive it, and then we bring it down into our life throughout the entire year.
Thank you. I'll try to keep that in mind. It's a shame. Yeah.
Okay. It's a shame.
$1 million question. Somebody sent in, yes. How can I be happy? They're going through a child that's never diagnosed with something. But in general, let's broaden the question. How could somebody feel besimcha when they're going through a very shver matzav, very shver time in their life? How do you tap into the feeling happy?
This, obviously, this is a very, very complicated question. And this is obviously a question that everyone deals with, most people deal with. The first thing, if the person is going through it, again, what you have to tell them, but what a person is going through is, you have to acknowledge what you're going through. You can't push away feelings. So a person is going through a very hard time, let's say physically, financially, emotionally, spiritually, especially, God forbid, the child. You just have to acknowledge that this is very painful, and allow that place to be, to push aside a feeling and say, oh, because I'm supposed to be simple, I'm supposed to push that aside. That's not the correct way to do it. First thing, the acknowledgement of what I'm going through is very painful. And Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do this. This is the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem is that if a person goes through a hardship, like the Rambam writes in the beginning of the Hilchos Taanis, that if a person says that it's mikra nikris, that it just happenstance, which is really a malik, a shakach b'derech, the idea of mikra just happens. So the Rambam says it's an achzari. This person is an achzari, which is cruel. And the root of the word achzari is brought down in the Farsh, that the root of the word achzari comes from achzar, which means that someone is foreign to it. You're foreign to this experience. Saying, it's not me, I don't know, and you detach yourself. So the first thing is to actually acknowledge that what you're going through is very painful, and Hashem wants you to feel the pain. And that's another question, why? But this is the human emotion that's coming up from this experience is very real, very real. And God forbid a person goes to mourning, the same thing. The Rambam runs the same language. If you don't cry, if a person passes away, you're an achzar. It's the same thing. You have to engage fully in life. But we have to also try, as much as we can, to compartmentalize. Like the Zohar says, the Baal Torah brings us in Tanya, which is the idea of compartmentalization. Compartmentalization means sometimes a person has joy in this part of the heart and he has bitterness in this part of the heart, which means I'm experiencing tremendous amount of pain and my life is difficult and it's very painful and it's true and it's absolutely correct. But that doesn't diminish or take away other part of myself, which is the experiencing of being joyful, especially the joy of the higher level of Purim. The joy of the other states, if you say, I don't see the Ashkacha. And you say that mental, the shaman level of mental joy comes from Atarza Sveikas. But I live in Sveikas. Atarza Sveikas is when there's a resolution of doubt. But I live in a place of doubt. I live in a place of clarity. I live in a place of uncertainty. So what does it mean I should be joyful? Like, I don't have that joy. So that's true. You're not living in a place of clarity. You're not placing, and acknowledge that. But then there's the essence, the essence of who you are as a joyful state, is to allow that also to have a voice. And to be present. And on Purim, especially Purim, and every single day, we have to make sure that we're allowing the multiple parts of ourselves to be expressed and experienced, and not allow one part of ourselves to completely cloud out the other part, that it overwhelms ourselves. Like a person says, you know, they're using the Rambam again as an example. The Rambam says a person mourns too much, he's a fool, he's a shaitan. Which means if you allow this emotion, which is real and very visceral, very real and very immediate, to overwhelm your life, that it dictates your life, and you say, okay, I'm just depressed now and everything's terrible, then you're not living a healthy life. So the solution is somewhat to engage your, this is why it says in Svar that the word besimcha is the same letters as the word machshava, which is thought. You have to think about it and say, how could I compartmentalize these ideas in a way that I can give room for this particular thing to give expression? And it's very real and it has a space. And now, especially on Purim, how could I tap into that place that brings me joy as well? And how can I be in a joyful state? And the more we're able to compartmentalize, And this avoida of compartmentalization, I know it's the right word, but this is a word. It works on all levels of avoda, all levels of spiritual practice, all levels of way a person should serve Hashem. If you're in the middle of davening, for example, another simple example, and you have machshava zara, and you have a foreign thought that's telling you, about your breakfast that you're going to have, and you're in the middle of davening Shemoneh Esrei, and you want to say, I don't want to think about breakfast, I want to think about davening. If you're doicha the machshava, you push away the thought. Whatever you resist persists. So the more you push it away, the more you fight with it, the more it comes back. That's why in Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef says that you actually have to wait. Asher yaver machshava. But sometimes you're not yaver. Sometimes you just get a vayta, vayta, vayta. It's more and more. What you tell yourself is, you're hungry. I understand. We'll talk about this. Give me 5 minutes. We're going to talk about we're going to talk about all your machshavas you want to have. You want to talk about what you have for dinner? Good. You want to talk about who you have to meet later on today? Fine. Now, Rifeinu Hashem and Eirafei. Now I just want to focus. And the more we're able to have this internal dialogue with our own selves, the more we're able to live really fully present and exactly what's happening, what we have to be doing every single moment of our lives.
Amazing. Could we spend a few minutes maybe to understand what it means that somebody is happy with who they are and not based on anything about what they did, or just talking about that essence, just being. I think a lot of people have a hard time, we discuss a lot of times whether it's childhood trauma, they don't really appreciate who they are, or self-esteem, whatever comes up. To be in that space of I am just fine. I don't know.
The emunah of oneself, the faith that a person has in their own self, which brings a person to a place of joy, is obviously intricately connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's faith in us. This is what when a person wakes up in the morning. When a person wakes up in the morning, this is pre-narratives, pre-stories. So 5 minutes after you wake up, you have already got some ISIS going on. The whole long story is, this is who I am. This is how it should be. This is how I shouldn't. My mother hurt me. My father ignored me. My Rebbe did this to me. This is already narratives. But right when your eyes open up, so this comes already from Talmid HaRamak, from Moshe Mabachir, from the to say to say Moedani. I mean, the Yerushalmi answer, but to say Moedani, to say these words, Moedani Lefanecha, means I'm grateful to be alive. Moedani Lefanecha. Thank you, Hashem, for making me alive. The aliveness, the awareness that I'm just alive. Forget about the narrative, forget about the stories. And what is the greatness that I'm alive? Because Rabba Munasecha means, simply it means, Rabba Munasecha means, great is my faith in you that you return my neshama to my body. But Rabba Munasecha means also, Tzaddik writes, other Tzaddikim write that Rabba Munasecha means that Hashem believes in me. Rabba Munasecha, great is your faith in me. You believe in me. You gave me a new life. You allow me to wake up to be alive, and for that, I'm grateful. And that sense of the moment waking is exactly what we're talking about—the state of the being. That's the Yichidishvanish. That moment. That's because it's before all the other madregas and levels and states that come into the mind. The first waking moments that a person has, mamash, you have to do this right away. First, when you first become conscious, before anything comes into your head, if you can catch those moments, the Baal Shem HaKadosh writes that all the burim that a person says throughout the day is going to be founded on the first diburim, first speech that a person says. All machshavas that you're going to have throughout the entire day is going to be based on the first machshavah in the day. When you wake up in the morning and you say, oi, that's it, your day's gehargit, you just killed your day. You wake up in the morning and say, Moedani Lefanecha. Thank you, Hashem. And the recognition that is ani lefanecha, that it's I in front of you. There's no Chaim Yaakov, there's no Moshe David, there's no one there. Just me and you, and that's the only thing in the world that counts. There's me standing noichuk pnei Hashem. I'm standing in front of you, Hashem, and all I can say is thank you. And when you wake up in the morning with this awareness of the aliveness of self, this is chazaytim. He gave me a neshama. You invested in me. You believed in me, and you gave me life. Now I'm gonna have to figure out what I do today, how my life is going to be. But that first waking moments. Is pre chet etzadas. This is every single thing that happens in the scope of the macro of time, that other marishan, and then later there's the chet, happens every single day. The waking moments of a person is pre chet etzadas, and then right away we do chet etzadas, because right away we think, oh, this and that, this is what you're gonna do, and then the typhus and everything comes in. So when you wake up in the morning, the first alive moments is that place of your atzmius, of your essence of who you are in your waking moments. Purim is to be in that place 24 hours. This is a gift. Obviously, it's something we have to try to connect to, but there's also a gift from Mumaila. This is an opening. And Lashon Acher is Kavuam, that the Dafke was created in the next year, which says a Sor, and that the whole idea that the Yom Tov is always created in the next year, like Bechanuk and Purim, is because Chazal were waiting to see if that same Or that allowed for the opening of that possibility in the year prior will happen again. And the Shana Acheres, when they saw that the same light, the same revealing, the same koyach that came down to this world was revealed, which means that Purim is not is a cosmic opening. This is an opening milmaila. This is an opening from above that allows us to be present in the place of Moedan Yilufanach, to be in a place of Eidah, to be in a person place of joy, of just pure simple joy of just being alive. And then when a person does that, it's going to be everything's going to be good. Everything's going to be kedusha. You know, on Purim, there's halacha that Tosfos brings down, but it's also brought to halacha that if a person rips someone's garments on Purim when they're playing for enjoy of Purim, it could be your potter. I'm not saying today, I'm not saying but you shouldn't rip people's clothes. But the idea is because if you're really in a state of Moedah Ani L'fanecha, if you're really in a place of your essence of who you are, you're only doing good things. It's only lichtik. The only time the reason why people do the Potsker once said that people are not Bali Avera, they're more Shtera. People are not, they're not Purico, they're not trying to get away from Hashem, they're not trying to get away from who they are to their Sharish and Hashem. But it's not true. They're just depressed. And depression is the biggest clipper. Depression is the worst thing. So if you can just let go of that depression that comes from all these narratives and stories and just be in a place, you're going to do good. You're going to do my service. It's going to be like who the my service simple sauce in your car. It's going to be a beautiful life. It's going to be lichtig, and you can do my samitzes and everything with Chazal saying.
Amazing. Okay, let's go to the next live question. Unmute.
Sorry, I don't hear anything.
Yeah, they're muting. Give it a second.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Hi, just 1 second. Okay, can you guide us through a specific conversation around specific for someone who's stuck in a belief that his or her mazel around financial matters is not strong? So really the question is agitating for a reconciliation between what our bitachon might have us say to ourselves and really stuck somewhere in between the reality of something that is playing out in a particular way. So again, the question is, what kind of conversation would be a productive conversation within ourselves around that issue? That to date, our mazel has been one way in any area, but let's just take financial for now. And yet we want to leave the opportunity open for the bracha to flow.
So this is a important question. So I'll tell you first a little story. There's a story is like this. There was once a great rabbi, the Chayza Lublin, the rabbi Lublin. And the Chayza was sitting by his tish, Shabbos, and by the tish, by the table, they always brought out fish. That was the first course. And the best piece of fish was the one that was in the yoich, that really like was, there was, anyways, there was one good piece of, there was the best piece of fish from all the fish. Let's say they put out 30 portions, it was the best piece. And when they started serving the fish, the Chayza turned to his son and told his son that, you see the guy in the back? He says, yeah, you see that guy, he's the pauper there, the schlepper with tattered clothes. He looked like a very disheveled character. He says, he's going to get the best piece of fish. Okay, so they start passing the fish, one person to the next. And so happens, the fish lands by that guy. So his son asks his father, the rabbi, he says, Rabbi, is it Ruach HaKodesh? What do you tell me? It's because you have Ruach HaKodesh? He says, no, it's not Ruach HaKodesh. He says, how do you know? Says that he's the biggest bar mazel around the table. He's the biggest mazel. He's the biggest mazel. He's the schlepper here. Everyone, they have a little big gevir, all the wealthy people sitting around the table. This guy's the schlepper. He's the pauper. He says, yeah, but he's the biggest bar mazel. He says, so why is he a pauper? He says, because the whole week, The only thing he thinks about is how could he get the chayzus fish? How could he get that piece of fish? This is all. So all his concentration of his mazel is concentrated on that particular piece of fish. Which means even a person has good mazel. What that means is another question. Even a person has good mazel, and everyone has bar mazel. Bar mazel is also seichel. Rashi says mazel is also seichel, his intelligence. Which means you have to know where you put your mazel to. That we have to know that even a person has mazel, where we're directing our attention, our kavanah, our intention, to which particular area. And it's even more than that. Because it says, Bitchu Hashem Adiyad, that there's a betochen, Voya Hashem Iftachai, that there's a Hoya Hashem Iftachai, that we put our trust in Hashem, and then there's a level of Hoya Hashem Iftachai, that Hashem is our trust. And there's a teaching that's brought down in Chassidus that what this means is like this, Shem Hashem, that when a person puts their trust, when a person has trust, let's say a person says, I have trust, I've been talking that Hashem will give me financial stability. But then what they do, they start placing their bitachin in the particular business venture that they're doing, or the particular person that they're working on a deal with. So they say, I trust Hashem that this particular deal is going to work out. I trust Hashem that this particular venture, this business venture, is going to work out. It says the Baal Shem, when you do that, it's still not good enough. Why? Because you're putting a limitation to Hashem's bracha. You're saying, I need the bracha to be chal, I need the bracha to land and to be vested in this particular business venture. And maybe this, let's say, for example, this business venture can make you $1,000. And Hashem says, I want to give you $1,000,000. But you said, Bitchu Hashem, you had trust in Hashem that the business venture will come. Now, what's the kli, what's the vessel through which B'tachem has this particular business that I'm doing? So the Abishah says, okay, I can only give you $1,000 because that's how much you can make in the deal. But I want to give you $1,000,000. Says the Baal Shem, Bitchu Hashem, Voy Hashem B'tachem means I trust in Hashem and I trust that it's only Hashem. Which means I don't put my trust into the thing itself, into the kli itself. It doesn't mean I don't do the kli. I don't do what I have to do. And to make a vessel to receive the blessing. But it could be that I want to put my effort into one thing, and then the bracha has actually come from a totally different thing. Because Hashem is infinite, and I don't want to be magda, I want to give akbala. I don't want to give a definition and a particularity to say that the blessing has to come in this particular thing. So what I'm telling you, but I don't want to tell you because I don't know exactly the situation. I'm saying this would be the answer to such a type of question, would be that we have to trust only in Hashem, and trust that the blessing is only from Hashem, and that therefore not try to think that it's like that I'm going to do this particular thing and the bracha is going to happen for this thing, and I tried this other thing and that didn't work out. Where our relationship is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's our relationship. And Hashem wants us to do things. So sometimes I'm going to do this, but because I do this, something the bracha for my parnasa will come from another thing. The moment we let go of this certain a narrative or story that we're forcing the blessing to be placed in that particular narrative, is the moment we open ourselves up to bigger brachas. And it's no longer defined as saying will come in this specific thing.
So could I follow up on that then?
Sure.
Given what you just laid out, then where do we put our focus? Let's say we have a few arenas of hishtadlus that are all sensible and reasonable and within our talents, within our wheelhouse, right? So then, given what you just said, where do we focus? I mean, we understand that Hashem could send the bracha through any or all of these avenues, but and we're not necessarily connecting into one or another, but we do have to bring a realistic approach and choose things that could bring forth bracha and it wouldn't be surprising or be considered an ace, right? So could you just tweak that a little?
So the Shaar B'tochen, Rabbeinu B'chai actually speaks about this particular thing that a person, when they want to do ishtadlus, they have to think about. But you said it correctly. You have to think about what is it that you're connected to, where could you use your talents, and where could you most express yourself in what you're doing, and. So just to add, is where, in which area in that you're doing, do you feel most alive? Because you can be very talented, you know, musically, or very talented in something else, and you'll say, but I really feel now, and also to be, is do something else. And the more we're open to to life, to Elohim Chaim, the living presence of Hashem, is the awareness that things actually sometimes change. So let's say when you're 20, maybe this was the right thing to you to do, and you felt very passionate, and you felt very connected to it, and that's the way the bracha had to come. Or, and now when you're 30, you're thinking you should think about something else. You should always be open to what is our innate talents and what Hashem is telling us and directing us. And what I'm suggesting is, even if the thing that you take and you say, this is the thing that makes me most alive and I'm most connected to, and I feel this is the bracha will be come through this particular thing, and if it came to something else, will be particular unless, so it'll be an S. That's don't define it. Don't say I think, you know, if I'm gonna become a therapist or I'm gonna become an artist, that's where the bracha will come. That's what I'm trying to do because that's what Hashem wants me to do. But there could be brachas because that someone comes to buy my art and then wants to do another business venture, which I actually feel very good about doing, and that turns out to be my life. But the moment we get stuck in a certain story and say this is what has to be done because this is the way I'm using my talents, we're limiting the bracha. To be open means I'm doing this and I'm going to do it very well because this is the right thing that I'm going to connect to. But I also aware that whatever Hashem presents to me at any single time, I'm open to that because the bracha really comes from Hashem.
Okay, Givaldic. Okay, Rabbi Benson, let's go to the next question. Hi.
Hi, good evening. You're able to hear me well? Okay. First of all, Rabbi Pinson, thank you very, very much. I'm totally in awe from the start. So that's why it's going to be difficult to ask the question properly. My question concerns the compartmentalization. The issue is this: going from one compartment to another, I could understand if you're coming from, let's say, a compartment of joy, if you're involved in something joyous, then you have to switch gears to something more serious or sudden, God forbid, a tragedy. You're getting that energy from the compartment of joy. But what if a person's in a state or a compartment that is challenging or sad, difficult, then they have to switch gears into the joy? Can you explain how does a person muster up? How do you develop that energy from a low negative state to jump into something joyful and energetic? I just want to understand that energy flow.
Right. It's a very good question. So you're saying from a high energy to low energy seems much more simpler than from a low energy to high energy. So that's a very it's a good description. So there's a few ways how to do this, and these are the few ways. Then I'll tell you what the ultimate is. The number one is something that's called that lahazir doilam alaktanim, which means to illuminate from the big states to the small states. Which means sometimes when we're in a bigger state of consciousness and a more expanded state of consciousness, and we're more energetically alive, we have to sort of put them in our mental banks. So not just experience it, but say, you know, that's actually what I'm feeling now. Maybe you can do it later. It doesn't have to be while you're experiencing, but after the experience, let's say you're at a wedding or you're at a celebration and you felt this real euphoria and really high, you should take a mental picture of that and say, that, you see, I actually can do that, snap. That's possible. That's a possibility for me to do. And that, what you do, and then you compartmentalize that emotion, that experience. And that will allow you that even when you're in a smaller state, the reason why some people cannot transition from a lower energetic state to a higher transition state is because they believe they can't do that because I'm in a lower transition state. I can't really get to that place. But you were there yesterday. You were there a week ago. And it's very much real in your memory bank. And you can actually experience. So just having that in your mental image of saying, yes, now it's very difficult for me going through these hardships for what I'm experiencing now is to really get to that better place because I can't get there. I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to make that bridge to get there. But I was there yesterday. I was there a week ago. I was there a month ago, which means I have it within me to be there. So I think that would allow what's one way of doing it. And I would say the other answer to this question, which is, it's not about a parallel opposite state. They're not polarities. The high energetic state is not in contrast to the lower state. It's not like listen, godless, which is small state and big state. There, it's who we are versus what we're doing or our expressions. the who we are reality is joy. The who reality is connectivity. The who reality is anil fanachad, is us in front of Hashem. That's the essence of who we are. All those other things that go on, all the drama of life, whether the ups or the downs, the moving upward and the moving down, the elation and the depression, all the things and everything in between are literally states. But we're not going from a non-energetic state to an energetic state. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to say, I'm experiencing these things. Now I just have to allow them, if you're really difficult going through these experiences, allow it to really give voice to it. And then say, but there's something in me, not just another state. This is who I am in my essence, that if I let go of all these stories, I'll slip into this higher level of consciousness, this higher level of joy that I actually am. So letting go. I can't hear you.
No. You want to say something? On mute.
Yes, but just to clarify, Rabbi, I understand that what you're saying prior to October 7th, but now like after October 7th, there's another element there. So I may have been dancing for joy, but there's this other piece now when we make the transitions. I'm not going to say it's guilt. I don't know what to call it. But as we are now going to Simchas and joy, what is going on in Israel, it does pull us. It does impact. So everything you're saying I can relate to prior to October 7th. Tap into that reservoir of joyous energy. Positive energy, let it fuel the other things I have to do. But now there's that other thing, I don't even know what to call it, but it's an energy of I'm dancing, I'm happy, I'm excited. And, you know, my fellow brothers and sisters are sitting captive, losing families, fighting in war. So that's the core of my question.
No, that's obviously a real issue. Obviously, this is what we're all experiencing now. But if we there's a way to think about this that will allow us is that on a deep level, Klal Yisrael, all of Klal Yisrael are actually limbs of the same body. So, God forbid, when a person is killed, it's not another person is killed; it's a limb of your body that's ripped off your a finger was lost, and. And a person should experience this pain as parts of their own Evar HaShkina. We're all the Evar HaShkina, we're all part of the Shkina, we're all part of the limbs of the Shkina. And we have to experience pain not only as someone else's pain, but our own pain. But there's also the opposite of side because of that is also us being joyous, whoever could be joyous, and whatever level they could be joyous. Not Chas V'Shalom forgetting that you lost half your body and limbs of your body were pulled off your hands, pulled off your body. And of course, you live with that, and it's very painful. But you also know that there's a mitzvah to be joyful, and the joyful, me being joyful, you being joyful, will affect the entire world, will affect all the body parts. That God forbid the child or the person that's a hostage, that's in a tremendous amount of stress and pain, they will experience a level of joy by us being joyful. When we do a yichud and we really feel this the connection, the interconnection that we're all part of one body, our joy will affect the joy and the hope and the optimism and the betachin and the emunah for everyone that's going through these experiences. So it's us, and we're doing it to ourselves to help ourselves be more helpful and be helpful and living with more trust and emunah.
I think the same way the pain goes that way, the simcha arsenal goes the other way.
Correct, correct.
Gavaldic. Okay, let's go to the next live question. You're on.
Hi. So as a woman, I feel like it's very hard to like sort of tap into the joy of Purim just because I feel like it's more geared towards the men. Like as a woman, we have like a lot of work watching the children running around. And then on top of that, watching our husbands as well because they're usually drunk. And then so how do I feel the joy dealing with all of that and what's in it for me?
You know, the Rebbe Rashab was once fifth Chabad Rebbe, Rebbe Rashab, one of the great rabbis, was sitting and discussing with his son and some chassidim what they should, what's the correct bracha for a woman? She says, Shalai Sana Isha, Shal Sakir Tsoina. And there was a pilpul, there was like a discussion about this. And his mother, Rebbe Tzarifka, walked in, there, Marash's wife, and said, this is a vaibish, this is a woman issue. Don't mix it. Let the woman to figure this out. So for me to tell you how you should experience, I think is a very, very not wise thing. And I don't think it's the correct thing. I can't tell you what I can't tell you because I would tell you an answer, but it's going to be Mulmaila Lamati. It's
going to be talked out. Who's your wife?
Oh, so my wife has to answer this question. But I do want to say that, that I think this should be a conversation. I'm not talking about you and talking about your wife and husband at this same level. There should be a conversation between spouses of exactly. That the woman should also feel Purim, that there should be a time that the woman should feel, I don't know how that would happen. Maybe they have their own masiba, maybe Purim night before Lel Purim, not the night of Purim, where women will get together. But I do feel that a woman has to carve out time that she should feel simplest Purim correctly. Maybe there should be a time that the husband goes around with the kids, doing Mishleich Manas, and the woman can do what she has to do, and this be, you know, read the Megillah for herself. But there is definitely something that has to be carved out for a woman's space, that she should have a place that woman, that Purim doesn't feel like just a pain, that you have to just, you know, pamper a bunch of people and take care of a bunch of people. I do think a woman has to carve out time. There's a mitzvah, the mitzvah of Purim is just as important for men and for women. It's the chiyuv is on a man and a woman the same way. And afim loisanes, and it's and I don't even, they were the miracle, but they caused the miracle. So I think women have to participate in Purim as much as they can. They have to figure out some type of healthy conversation with their husbands to figure out a way that you're going to celebrate Purim correctly. And more than that, I'm not going to tell you, because then it's going to vibe a shiny on them. I'm not going to mix into the women issues.
Here's a question that somebody sent in. I wonder, for those who feel... So he sent in, he's not sure what Purim is all about, and I feel that it's really geared for kids. And again, every year the same, you know, what would the answer to those people that are like basically disconnected, and it feels like a Yom Tov for kids. And again, every year, the same thing.
Right. So the Yom Tov to kids, ba'oimik on a very deep level, is emes. It's emes. It's true. The reason why people feel that Purim is a Yom Tov for kids is because it's a childlike Yom Tov. It is a childlike Yom Tov.
I want to send the next question. Somebody sent in a question, and I think it's tied in that. What's the Yom Tov, just like any other Yom Tov, Pesach, and all the other Yom
Tov? So this that's the same thing, right? Yeah. Correct. In other words, every other Yom Tov, like the Rambam writes Hilchos Yom Tov, there was like a police that used to go around to make sure people drink in a correct way. Everything had to be with a strong Seder, strong order. That even when you drink, it's not to get intoxicated, it's not to drink too much. Everything was done with das, with order, structure, with a shear. Everything had a very, very strict shear. You have to eat a particular shear matzah, you have to eat a shear mur. Everything was a strict measurement, and everything was a strict time. Purim, the nekuda of Purim, actually the nekuda of Purim, that's why children are gravitate towards the Oyer Purim. Because the Oyer Purim is Adalayada, is the Oyer Rish Delayasyada, is the light that comes down that's higher. It's the Oyer of Chochmah, it's a higher Madrega than even of Seichel, that of intelligence. That's where children naturally gravitate towards it, because it's a childlike Yom Tov, which means that a person celebrating Purim celebrates Purim different than he celebrates on Hanukkah, and celebrates certainly when he celebrates on Shavuos, and certainly different than he celebrates on Pesach, which is everything is measured and everything's orderly and structured and exactly the right shear and exact amount of time. Purim, the mitzvah of Purim is to do things in exaggeration. The mitzvah of Purim is everything you do, do more. So in some of the Paschal rites, for example, like Matanas of Yerim, every single day you have to give tzedakah. But on Purim, chala poishet yad, give more tzedakah. Everything a person eats, Purim, you have to eat more. Every day a person maybe takes today more. Everything you do is an exaggeration, which means Purim is the idea of bli agbalas. They get to the place of beyond Agbala. Now, in order to get to this place, which is very important, and someone says, I don't feel it. Because in order to get to the place of beyond Das, the way the beyond us, and another way of thinking about it is the Oyer Levona, is the white fire, is the Eish Shchur Eish Levona. There's a white fire and a black fire. And that's in the Torah. We have the black fire, which is the halacha, which is revealed the light that says, you know, this is what it says. This is the mitzvah to do this particular thing. That's the Eish Shechur, the black fire, which is the halacha, the world of principle, the world of order, the world of structure. And then there's the white fire, which is the Eish Levana. And the white fire is Ein Sof. It's infinite. That's why the white fire and the Torah is connected. There's no separation in the white fire. In the black, every single ois has to be separated from each other. That's the definition of black. This is order and structure. The white fire is Mitchalas Eish Shechur, from the beginning of the Torah to the end of the Torah is one. The Purim connects us to the Oyer Levana, to the Eish Levana. But in order to get to the Eish Levana, to this white fire, to this Oyer that's Lamayla Min Hadas, or higher than Das, and just be the beingness of joy, to get to connect that connection, which is beyond description, beyond revelation, beyond definition. It's just who we are. To get to that place, the only way to get place is through Eish Shechur. We have to go through the Eish Shechur. What's the Eish Shechur? Eish Shechur is limited there. Come on. If you want to get to the place of feeling the Oyer of the Eish Levana of Purim, you have to learn about Purim. You have to enter Purim with Hachana. Learn whatever it's not relevant what you learn. You have to learn something that's adaita nafsh, something that you learn to you that's relevant to you, and you have to personalize it and internalize it and learn about it and study and meditate and think about it. And then when you get to the place of Purim, through Das, that's where you get to Purim, through Das, you get to the place that's beyond Purim. So the childlike quality that's revealed in Purim is specifically childlike because it is the Oyer Purim. It is the light that's revealed in Purim. So the mannerism of even an adult that's really experiencing the Oyer Purim is childlike because it's without Das, or at least transcendent of Das. So it's connected. And I think, again, it goes back to the idea of the more we prepare ourselves, the more we learn about it, the more we can enter it, the more we enter with the right mindset, the more we'll actually experience it.
What are some recommendations for women to learn?
First of all, they can read a book called The Month of Purim. That's one out of 12. So I think it's in English. So there's a lot of things are Purim, but I think this today you're asking because it's like not familiar with
no, because before they asked how they tap in the
women. Yeah, so they should have a woman to go down there. Yeah, there's a lot of things in English. There's a lot of a lot of things today are in English that are revealed. And even people that I don't have so much time, they can sit for a few minutes and or listen to a shir. You should get into Purim. To feel the life of Purim, we can't just prepare, you know, peklach for the rabbis and then mishloach manos, and there comes Purim. You're the whole week you're shopping. I don't know where you shop, but the whole week you're shopping and getting ready. And the time Purim is you're spent and you're finished and you're already cooked and you're trapped and you just like, and now you have to schlep your kids all around. So it's not Purim. So you have to choose to enter Purim with a little bit more achana, and the more you with a little more attention, with more kavana. So listen to shir, read something, learn something. So the more you'll enter into Purim correctly. For men and women, just as important.
Take a Valdic Ravens on. Okay. Let's go, you're on.
Hi. For this year so far. I just want to have a follow-up question from before when the Betochen question. It's also connected to Purim because the more we understand our connection to Hashem, the more we're, you know, at peace and everything that you're saying also. You mentioned that basically if a person has Betochen in the Keli itself, then basically Hashem doesn't help him as much as if he would have emunah in Hashem himself. I'm saying I thought about this like a lot of times, like why, kind of like what's the reason for that? Like if a person has emunah in Hashem, and let's say a person doesn't get the memo and you know he does this the rest of his life, so he didn't realize he should only have emunah only in Hashem, but he had emunah his whole life. So because he didn't have emunah in that aspect, like it would be different like to get the or whatever.
You shouldn't think about it as a punishment. I'm not saying that it's a punishment. That if you do this, this is a punishment that you can't get through. It means it's different. The shefa wants to come down. There's an oyer that wants to come down. And if a person is magbal the oyer, defines the oyer, places the oyer in a particular thing, like the pauper with the shefa of Parnassa by the Chayza, he had a shefa for greatness. Be wealthy, to expect, to have a lot of mazel. Now, Hashem is going to give you that koyach, but if you're going to put it into the particular thing, the bracha is going to be packaged into that thing that you created. So if the package is a small package, the aura will come into that package that's small. The packaging, the kli, is what receives the aura. And based on the receptivity of the kli, how big the kli is, that's how much aura you're going to receive. So if you choose to have a small kli, or to be defined by this particular vessel, this particular kli, so not that you're punished, Chas v'Shalom, Hashem is not punishing you for not having this amuna. The mechanism of the aura can't penetrate the kli, because the kli is holding it back. It's not connected.
So the way basically, I guess your amuna comes to you is by what you believed in.
Yes. By what's the kli that you hold? That's the ikir is the kelim. We have to create the correct kelim in our life, so we can receive the correct oil.
Right.
This is exactly what we're talking about with Achana of Purim also, to prepare for Purim. Now, preparing for Purim is the kli. And then when the oil of Purim comes, if you have a good kli, then you receive the kli. You receive it correctly. You don't have a kli, it's just going to pass through you. The oil is going to come. You're going to have a very wonderful experience of Purim. And it's going to have no lasting effect. It's just going to be what it is for the day. And that's it. And your life will just seem like it's every year, every single year. Just it's a repeat. It just, every great. This year, airport, next year, airport, next year, airport. Nothing happens. Nothing changes. And the reason why nothing changes is because you didn't make the kli. You didn't make the vessel. Hashem says, I want to give you all this light. I don't know where to put it. So on Purim, you're going to be swept up in this light. But after Purim, if you don't have the vessels, that's Makabal the Zohar that's going to receive this light, to shep this light, to like draw this light into your life, is not going to have a chalois. It's not going to anywhere to land. So we have to make sure that we have the kelim. The kelim is the preparations. And on Purim, the kli to receive the oyer of Purim is to go to a place of Adalayat, to let go of all the stories and all the narratives and recognize it's exactly always the way Hashem wants it. Everything is perfect. Eidam Levade, that's it.
Thank you.
Okay, so it could be we're talking Madregas over here. Here's a question that somebody sent in. I think it's more, I live a life from the outside as a from Jew and doing it all. However, I'm totally disconnected. I'm only doing it because of my social status, family, and community. Can you help me understand? And what can I do to start being more connected to my Yiddishkeit? So in general, I guess.
It's a general question. Every single person has what Chazal called, and Maharal Shabbos calls a Zohar Tvei. Zohar Tvei is a particular mitzvah that they connect with. Even a person that's very disconnected and a person that's only outwardly doing the mitzvahs, but inwardly they feel empty. There's one mitzvah, and the mitzvah could be very something that, you know, most people won't think about, because the Gemara gives an example of tzitzis, which is a very, you know, interesting example that the Zohar Tvei, the special mitzvah. And Zohar, the word Zohar also comes from the word Zohar, which means that it's a lichtik. This particular mitzvah light is lit up, is lichtik by this person. Every single individual has to think to themselves, what is in their life, a very big question, what is the Zohar Tvei? What is the thing in my life that makes me feel most connected to? Which particular way? Maybe I'm not connected to Taryab mitzvahs. 612 mitzvahs don't talk to me. But there's some mitzvah, some way of doing, maybe it's Zmir, maybe it's a minig, maybe it's connected to how I sing Shabbos, maybe it's connected to the heat of the chant. It's like getting again. Something, some type of mitzvah that it resonates with me, and some type of mitzvah that I'm connected with. And the question that a person knows to ask is to try to find that thing, that Zohar Tvei, and that's the entry point. That will be the entry point into feeling more pnimius. Because when a person enters that fully and say, okay, that's the mitzvah, so maybe I can't do this and the other thing, and the other things, it's too many things and I don't feel connected to them, and I'm going to choose one thing. Let's say a person davens. Let's say a person says, I daven the whole davening. This is a less intense type of question. Let's say, I daven the whole davening, but 90% of the davening, or, you know, I can't focus. And so I end up, you know, just thinking, daydreaming for a half hour every day when I daven. So take one thing, just one thing, one passage. I don't know, one passage from the entire davening, and say, that is going to be my focus every single day. Every single day, I'm going to think about what it means to be grateful to Hashem. And go with pinimis. Every day sit with that. Sit for that for 20 minutes. Do the rest of that very quickly. But that nekuda is what you focus on. The same thing also with mitzvahs. Find the one particular mitzvah in your life that you can connect with. And through that, live it deeply as much as you can. Discover it, learn about it, go deeper into it, try to experience it more. And the more you do that, the more your nefesh will open up. and you're able to experience more depth, more deeply the other things, because everything is interconnected. That all the mitzvahs is a chativa achas. So once you connect to one, you're able to open up to other things. I think a lot of times people feel like it's so much, so they give everything up. So forget about so much. Take one thing. Take one particular thing and go to that Lamech very deeply. I think that would be helpful.
All of it. Okay, let's go to the closing part now, Rabbi Yisai. Just like Gresh Shkoyach for Rabbi Dov Be'er Pinsif for coming on tonight, giving them a very tief Hashir, very tief, tremendous chizik before Purim, and just to get into, you know, where we were holding and really what Pnimis and Simchas are. Again, I think we have a lot more to talk about. touching the surface, but Gresh Shkoyach, yes. 79. Again, anybody who wants to join the WhatsApp statuses every week in the community, text WhatsApp 732-314-1710. You can also go to MenachemBerenfeld.com and sign up for the weekly emails and the flyers and everything. Again, every Sunday night, 9:30, the Zoom ID. Different shurim, different rabbonim, different topics. Next week, either we're going to have the therapist, Rabbi Hollander, or we're going to have Masila talking about financial. We're still working it out. Me, Menachem, I was traveling, so it was a little hard this week. But hopefully by next week, we'll have a beautiful shir. The share before Purim, and the following week will actually be Purim itself, so there won't be a share. Please join us. Everything is recorded on shalomyomanachemberenfeld.com. If anybody has any questions, you can email coachmanachem@gmail.com. Tonight's share again is 179. If you want to listen to it on the phone number is 732-305-9001. If anybody wants to be in touch with Rabbi Pinson, he has a website. It's Iyun, I-Y-Y-U-N. Again, that's I like I. YYUN.com. If you want to email him, it's contact@ion.com. You can email Rabbi Pinson when he has time. He'll get back to you. Personal questions, to all the advertising sponsors, Liquid Scoop, Elinario, Five Town Central, Chayla Kaufman, Peter ACN, and this is Mika Sofer from CUL Live. We're going to go to closing. First, we're going to go to Coach Menachem, and then Rabbi Dov Be'er Pinson will give us the final machshava that we should leave off with. Coach Menachem.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And like we heard, it was deep. I think we went through a lot of techniques for those who listened. You know, we can listen. I have to listen again just to get all those techniques of how to navigate, how to actually get to those ideas from one state to another. And most important is to understand Purim at a deeper level, to get to that space of kacha. Again, we know that there's a lot of logic we pick up, but it takes practice, like we heard, by learning, by stopping for a few minutes, by meditating, by thinking about it, get to that level of kacha yasalayish azoy. This is it. This is who I am. And I would say it's, again, it's not something that we're not easy. I was going to say it's not something we're born with, but I think it is something we're born with. It's something we're born with. If you don't take it away, it's there. And that's why Purim. We go back to that state of just that level of just being born. So thank you very much for being with us. And Mitch, we should be able to take what we learned tonight and we should be able to put it in, live with it, with that pneumius. Go
ahead. This is maybe the reason why the whole Rabbi Bill Prince is here.
Just for tonight.
Exactly. It's always like this. You always have to live with the, you know, the whole one of the things of Purim is that it has to is a mechias amalek. You're raising amalek. Amalek is like the koruch baderech, made everything cold. It says mikra nikra. Everything is happenstance. Nothing is really meaningful, and it's but everything has an intention. Everything has points. That's it's interesting that like who the most over single process of yikar is lashon kari also. That the yikar, the final, the peak of Lehuda Moisar, it was lifting, it was lit, and it was beautiful, and it was joyful, and the highest level is the yikar. And the yikar means precious, but also has the same word as a carry, which is happenstance. So the v'nahapachol, the turning over of Amalek, of the world of happenstance, is to live with a state of pleasant surprise at every moment. Things become precious when we don't expect them. When things are expected, we think this is going to happen, that's going to happen, then we don't live for the preciousness. And the Megillah is telling us that if you want to live with Lakim Chaim, you want to have the Vekas in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to really be connected to Hashem and Lakim Chaim, the living God, we have to be open to the Vayikar, that things should be precious, and things become precious to us when we say, wow. And we should live with the state of wow every single moment, every single day. Because Hashem is always talking to us. Hashem always wants us. Hashem is always in dialogue with us. Hashem always believes in us. Every single morning, wake up is Moida Ani. And we should be grateful. And Hashem should give us the strength. And like I said before, Hashem does give us the strength because this is the essence of who we are. Depression is the Eitzev. Eitzev is like a painting. It's covered over. The joy, the essence of the joy is our root. It's place we have it. This is who we are. This is the place of our Tzvekis, place of our unity with Hashem. So Hashem should give us a koyach that we should have the wisdom and the clarity to open our eyes and to truly experience the things that we have already, the treasures that we have in our neshama that's connected to Likus, that we're able to experience Purim this year in a lichtika way, in a healthy way, in a holy way. And this should be Be'ez Hashem, the Purim that we dance to into with the Be'ez Mashiach Tzidkenu B'meirah V'yameinu.
Thanks, Rabbi Pinson. Much sure we'll see everybody next week. Everybody, listen to the show over a few times so you really get it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good night, everybody.
I'm listening to everyone.